As the summer sun blazes down, many of us are heading out to the trails, campsites, and all those beautiful natural spaces that we love. But with warmer weather comes increased activity, and that includes some of our slithery friends. That's right. Today we're setting our compass directly on a crucial topic for summer safety, snake awareness. I caught up with Okanichi Council Commissioner Scott Storchek, who's also one of the foremost experts in our state on venomous snakes. We'll cover everything you need to know to stay safe, informed, and respectful of these often misunderstood creatures. So whether you're a seasoned leaner or scout, buckle up, because understanding snake safety is essential to fun and healthy summer adventure. Talk with a little bit about your scouting career.
Okay. I started my scouting career in 1968 in what was then the Laurel Highlands Council in Pennsylvania. What started my interest in snakes and snake recognition is we were camping with our Cub Scout pack. I was the den chief, and one of the young kids comes running up to his mother that, "Mommy, mommy, mommy, my worms are biting me." And he reached into his pocket and pulled out a handful of juvenile copperheads.
Oh, no.
And he had over 40 bites on his hands, thighs, stomach, leg. Mm-hmm. And he didn't make it. Mm. Because no amount of antivenom you're going to push in a six-year-old that's going to be able to cover that many bites. So I've been doing venomous snake recognition ever since. Mm-hmm. What I do here is I now have a North Carolina Department of Wildlife Resources endangered species permit, which allows me to retain possession of some of the endangered species that we have here in North Carolina. And out of the six venomous snakes in North Carolina, four of our six species are protected species here in North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
That it's illegal to kill, capture, maintain, or even have body parts from any of those species.
So you can't just walk around with the rattle of a pygmy rattlesnake just because you want to.
No. What I tell people is Carolina pygmy is endangered in North Carolina. I never thought that I would ever see a Carolina pygmy. Mm-hmm. And several years ago, a gentleman down in Wilmington caught one. And while he was on YouTube, he killed it, skinned it, preserved the skin, all the while announcing that this is an endangered species in the state of North Carolina. So not only did he get the $10,000 fine, he also got 6 months in the federal penitentiary for basically exhibit A in his in his trial.
let's admit what he was doing. Yeah, you can't at that point just admit I didn't know what I was doing, because you admitted you knew what you were doing on camera. Here's your sign, or at least a pair of handcuffs.
And so then DWR contacted me and they said, "Hey, we know you do a lot of these presentations. Would you like to add this snake skin to your collection?"
Right.
The snake's dead. We want to get some benefit out of the snake being dead.
You've come to our unit, and I've seen you at camporees and summer camps educating us about venomous snakes. And it's now summertime, and we're probably going to see more and more snake bites as we venture into the woods. But where will we most encounter a venomous snake, not just look at this, black racer that's going across my backyard?
Two things. One, in our part of North Carolina, we only have two species that live in this area. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the eastern copperhead, which is found in every one of the 100 counties here in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then we have the cottonmouth. Mm-hmm. Cottonmouths you're going to find usually near water. Mm-hmm. Copperheads you're going to find pretty much everywhere that you have cover.
Okay.
And when I cover, we're also going to have a food source.
Okay.
Where we see a lot, particularly as it dries out, is the snakes will move to where there's prey, where there's water. All these people that have these nice gardens, mm-hmm. Have this nice shrubbery where they have watered everything and the vegetation is lush and green. So you're going to get frogs, toads, lizards, mm-hmm. mice, and that's where they're going to hang out. Your copperheads are usually going to be a little bit higher in terms of elevation, but it's going to be a place where their natural coloration is going to blend them into the environment.
Okay.
Because all these snakes are ambush predators.
Okay.
What I mean is they curl up in a location where they know that there's prey, and then they'll wait for the prey to come by.
I've always been told that cottonmouths are mean. Like they're the kinds that we would be in the water, and if you saw one in the water, get out of the water because it's going to chase you. We are larger than they are. Will they proactively chase something that's larger, or when we encounter them, is it, if there's a bite, is it more reactive because we're encroaching upon their space?
Even the smallest human is too large, is too large for prey.
Right.
A bite is a defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And the snake's going to bite if it's startled or it fears that it can't get away.
Okay.
Actually, for both copperheads and cotton mouse, about one out of every four bites is a dry bite.
Okay.
Because if the snake envenomates, it now can't hunt for another 10 days to 2 weeks.
Oh, interesting.
And so that's what they say for the current treatment for the snake bite. What they want you to do is take a marker and circle the bites. Because mm-hmm. what they're looking for is, have you been envenomated? Is it, and is the venom spreading? Now, when you say, you know, people say, no, cotton mouse are chasing you. No, what's happening is they're trying to get away, and their boar or hide sight happens to be...
Oh, okay. On the opposite side.
happens to be on the other side of you, because they have burrows, preferred places where they like to lay.
Right.
And if they're going to chase you, they want to make prey out of you.
Right.
And when we're talking Cub Scouts, even the smallest Cub Scout's not going to fit inside a 2 foot to 3 foot.
Not unless we're down in the Everglades and some of those pythons that people are releasing down there.
Now, some of the pythons down in the Everglades, you know, those reticulated pythons, the Burmese down there, they can. I think I told you the story. I had one of my students that used to have a reticulated python that she used to sleep in a bed with her. And it would usually curl up on her stomach for warmth. Snake got to be about 9-10 feet long, and then she went to the vet. She said, I understand the snake's been, instead of curling up there, the snake's been stretched out full length in the bed.
Uh-huh.
And the vet looks at her, the snake's measuring to see if you'll fit. That was the last night that she allowed the snake to sleep in bed with her.
Oh, wow. Summer's the perfect time where we've got packs that are for their summertime activity awards, or at least their summertime activities. They might be going out on a hike, and those snakes will often be, you know, daytime sunning themselves, and the evenings getting in a place where they'll be cooler and somewhat hidden. But if we're hiking around Yates Mill Park or one of the places where we might see one there in the woods, not necessarily on a paved trail, what do we need to do? How do we need to treat it? And how do we know right off the bat, all right, is this a cottonmouth? Is this a copperhead? Is this a venomous snake versus just...
Okay. Two things. Both a copperhead and a cottonmouth are pit vipers.
Okay.
Which means they have a sensory organ between their nose and their eye. Mm-hmm. And that allows them... Mm-hmm. Next, it enables them to detect heat. Most of the time during the day, they're not hunting during the day.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be active in the very early morning and twilight at evening,
okay,
because that's when their prey becomes active. Right. And that's also a temperature difference between their prey and the environment that their organ can pick it up more easily. What I tell people to do, walking through the leaves, walking out, scuff your feet, make vibrations, because that snake can pick that up. If they're laying there sunning themselves, that gives the time to step away.
Mm-hmm.
When you see people, and I cringe every time someone I see it do, when they see a bound log in the middle of the path, they'll just step up and they'll step down. And they don't bother to check if someone is either laying on top of the log or curled up on the other side. We see a lot, particularly like when people have stacked wood. They'll just reach in there, start grabbing the wood, not paying attention to see if someone else has taken up residence, because that wood generally is going to start having ants. They're going to start having grubs. They're going to start attracting the things that the snake will prey on. The big thing is letting the snake know that you're there.
Okay.
Make sure that there's vibration set up to give the snake an opportunity to get away. Now, a snake can typically strike roughly about 1/3 of its body length.
Okay.
Well, copperhead will top out around 3 feet. Cottonmouth usually around 4.
Mm-hmm.
So you're figuring roughly about 2 to 3 feet. You're in danger of being struck. You're only going to get struck if you're posing a threat to the snake.
Okay.
General rule of thumb, give them at least one human body length away from them.
Right.
We'll
say one adult leader body length.
One adult leader body length. Yeah, because some of those little tigers and lions may not be.
Yeah. So... you mentioned it earlier, if we're out hiking and somebody's not careful, somebody gets too close, somebody ends up getting bit. You mentioned marking it with a marker. Maybe we put a marker as now part of our Scout Essentials of something that we need to carry with us just in case. You know, the old guidance back when I was a scout is, you know, tourniquet on the area. Is the guidance still the same for first aid?
It's totally different, because what they found with putting on a tourniquet or a restriction band, it's going to not stop the venom that's gotten into the bloodstream. Okay. B, particularly with cottonmouth, they have a cytotoxic component of the venom that helps break down cells. And what you were doing is you're restricting that venom to that hand. And you were having greater cases of people losing the hand, losing the finger.
Okay.
So on and so forth.
The and by losing, guys, you mean it's amputation at that point.
Amputation.
Right.
So current rule of thumb is what they want you to do is mark the bite, take a picture of the snake.
Mm-hmm.
Do not try and capture the snake. One, the ERs do not want you to bring that snake into the ER. Two, roughly about all quarter of all bites are people trying to capture the snake to show the doctor what the snake was.
So you'll get envenomated a second time.
Yeah, you'll get envenomated a second time. The all of our snakes, with the exception of the coral snakes, have the exact same anti-venom.
Okay.
So you don't. It's not like out west where you have to know the specific species to see if you need Anavip or whether you need Crowfab.
Okay.
So what they want you to do is mark the bite. I know it's easy to say, hard to do. Stay calm. And actually try and keep the bite below the level
below the of the heart.
Because you want that venom to work against gravity going up. Because if I do this, the
it's
natural
just draining thing, straight
gonna,
down.
It's going to drain straight down. None of our snakes will present a life to limb within a matter of minutes. You have several hours to get to the hospital.
Okay.
If you've been envenomated, you'll probably start feeling symptomatic probably within 20 to 30 minutes.
And what are some of the symptoms feel like? Or
you're going to be seeing a redness, swelling. You're going to start feeling a throbbing. It's going to feel warm, and you'll start to see swelling. And so you have several hours to get to the hospital. What they'll do once you get to the hospital is what type of snake was it? Okay, then they'll have to test you for anti-venom reaction. Crowfab is made from sheep's blood. Anavip is made from horse's blood.
Okay.
And there's certain people that have allergies to certain animal proteins.
Okay.
And so what they'll check to make sure is you're not going to have an anaphylactic shock in response to the anti-venom. And then it'll take between 4 and 6 vials, depending on the degree of envenomation, what your body mass is.
You mentioned that there's 4 types of venomous snake.
Total of six. We've only got 2 in this geographic area. The only place where you're going to find all 6 is going to be the Wilmington area.
Okay.
So if you go down to Fort Fisher.
Okay.
So they have the copperhead. They have the cottonmouth. They have the eastern diamondback. They have the timber or canebrake rattlesnake. They have the Carolina pygmy rattlesnake. And they have the eastern coral snake.
And the coral snake is the one that can easily be confused with the king snake.
That is correct. There are 61 species of coral snakes worldwide. There are 3 in North America.
Okay.
Only the 3 North American species follow the rhyme. And the rhyme is red touches yellow is a dangerous fellow. Red touches black is a friend of Jack.
Okay.
So we do not have coral snakes in this part of North Carolina. However, we do have the 3 mimics. There's a scarlet snake, a scarlet king snake, and there's a milk snake.
Mm-hmm.
And with all 3 of those, the red bands will touch the black bands.
Okay.
What you'll also see with those 3 mimics is the head is going to be a mixture of reds, blacks, and yellows. It's going to have a pattern.
Okay.
Whereas with the coral snake, the head is going to be pure black, and it's going to have a yellow ring
around its neck.
Yeah. And so when I do venomous snake recognition, I always talk I'll have at least 3 characteristics that you're going to use to identify the snake. You can't simply rely on pattern. So here we have, you know, the cottonmouth and the copperhead. Generally speaking, they are going to have a triangular shaped head. That said, some snakes will flatten out their head as a threat display.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, they're going to have a heavy body. Generally, they're going to have elliptical cat-like pupils.
Okay.
Then you're going to go ahead and look at the pattern. Both copperheads and cottonmouth belong to the same genus. They're just different species within the genus.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to have Hershey's kisses.
Okay.
Which means the dark spot is going to be thin on the top, thick at the bottom.
Okay.
With a copper head, it's going to be a very, very smooth pattern.
Okay.
It almost looks like it was painted on. The cotton mouth has a pixelated part. It's jaggy. Each scale is going to be a different color. It'll be a little zigzag pattern at the edges.
It's almost like the digicam camouflage, the digital camouflage.
That's the best, probably the best description that I've seen. Other thing, particularly as we get here in the August-September time period, all venomous snakes give live birth. And so they come out of their mother fully armed. Both the copperhead and the cottonmouth will have a bright yellow-green tail, kind of like this T-shirt.
Uh-huh. You've got a Deglo.
That Deglo shirt. And it's called a caudal lure. Well, they'll use that. They'll vibrate that to attract prey.
Okay.
They are the only snakes that have that bright yellow tail as juveniles.
Okay.
So the other snakes that we have here that are non-venomous give birth to eggs. The pattern can look very similar. And so if you see anything with bright yellow tail, you know that that's going to be a venomous snake here in North Carolina.
Now, what do you find is most troublesome when talking in some of either the naivety that they have or you know, the way that they want to just immediately run up and approach a snake and run towards a snake instead of giving it distance? Like, what do you think is the most concerning?
It's most concerning for me is only good snake's a dead snake.
Hmm.
A lot of those snakes have an important role that they play in the environment. You know, rat snakes keep down the mice. They keep down the rats.
Mm-hmm.
They will also prey on juvenile venomous snakes, particularly like with the king snakes. They hunt other snakes. You know, I used to have a 6-foot Eastern king in my front yard, never saw a copperhead. And then one of my neighbors went out of the way to run him over. And now I really got to be careful when I'm weeding first time at the beginning of the season to make sure that I don't disturb one who's hiding underneath the bushes.
Right.
If you don't want them on a property, don't give habitat to their prey. If you have bushes, make sure that you have a clear gap underneath the bush so you can see under.
Mm-hmm.
We have a scouter who naturalized their yard.
Mm-hmm.
And has been bitten 3 times in the last 5 years. Because pine straw is getting a little thick. Let's rake up the pine straw.
Yeah.
Not wearing protective gear.
You know, you've also been for a long time one of our wilderness first aid instructors. What do you teach our WFA people, especially if they're on their way to Philmont or some of the other high adventure bases when it comes to, you know, snake encounters out there?
Snake encounters out there, as you get further out west, like at Philmont, New Mexico has 9 different species of venomous snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Philmont itself actually has 2. But they're right on the eastern ridge of the western diamondback. And they also have the Great Dunes prairie rattlesnake.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Philmont. This was my 8th trip, and I've never seen one. Philmont, all of the national parks have a lot of habitat.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful where you place your hand. Be careful where you place your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't reach in an area that you can't see. And when I say you can't see within a 2 to 3 foot radius.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely, if you're stepping over a downed tree, take a look at what's on the other side before you step down.
Right.
I mean, I was at Death Valley 2 years ago, and there's the sand basin down there. And I come into the parking lot to walk out in the dunes, and the guy's screaming, and I look, and he's got a 2.5 foot desert sidewinder buried in his hand.
Mm.
And so he shakes the snake off, you know, as I'm treating him, he's like, conversation, well, how'd you get bit? Well, I saw the snake. It wasn't rattling, so I thought it was safe to pick up and show my kids. There's between 6,000 and 8,000 venomous snake bites per year. On average, in the United States, we have 5 deaths per year. if you look at the statistics, that year for which they have published was 2023. We had five deaths. One was the world's leading expert on timber rattlesnakes, who was out collecting rattlesnakes for his collection.
Mm-hmm.
Second one was a professional herpetologist who collected venom for making anti-venom.
Right.
Two were evangelical Christians who practice snake handling as part of their faith. The last guy was bit by a copperhead and happened to go into anaphylactic shock, not from the venom, just because of the
right
the envenomation. So what I tell scouts, what were four out of the five people doing that you should not be doing?
Handling the snakes.
They were handling the snakes.
I guess the biggest rule of thumb is you see a snake, enjoy it from a distance. Don't try to pick it up.
Even with all of my experience, like, 'cause I've been doing this 50 something years.
Right.
If I can't positively ID with at least three, I'll just walk away. The only times I'll usually do that, if I happen to come across one at scout camp,
uh-huh,
and I know it's not venomous, and I see a group of kids, scouts around, I may pick it up. Hey, look, here's a rough green snake, or here's an earth snake. Here's a decays brown. Here's an eastern rat. Because most of the time, the kids probably don't know that they're there.
Yeah.
And then go ahead, take them away from the camp, and then go ahead and release so someone doesn't determine that only good snake's a dead snake.
Yeah. What would your parting advice be for anybody that's planning on hitting the trail this year?
Enjoy the outdoors, and you need to be aware of what you're going, whether it be coming across a snake, whether it be wandering through a patch of poison ivy.
Yeah.
Just be aware of your environment. Enjoy being outside.
Awesome.
It's a great experience.
Yeah. Well, and it's time to escape the great indoors, as we
yes.
used to say it, right? I remember being a feral child in my formative youth and came back dirty as could be and was just, you know, not in this, I don't want to say carefree, but was enjoying the outdoors. And we need to get back to the kids just, you know, doing that more.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Scouter's Compass. If you've enjoyed today's show, be sure to follow and share it with your fellow scouters. This has been a production by the Cardinal District and Okanagan Council of Scouting America. For more information, visit www.ocscouts.org. Our theme music is by Dan Leibowitz. Until next time, I'm Chris Michaels. Stay sharp, stay kind, and keep scouting forward.